How's everybody doing? Welcome to Thursday. Hopefully everybody's doing good. I'm Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, ChicagoJazz.com. And of course, you are watching Chicago Music Revealed. And this is episode 43. Yes, we have been doing this for the majority of the wonderful stay-at-home order here in Chicago and around the world for the most part. Welcome to everyone watching all over the city. Of course, I've got the show is also streaming live on Chicago Jazz Magazine Facebook page, Chicago Music Revealed Facebook page, The Music Guide, and a few other platforms. But I appreciate everyone commenting, everyone liking. And of course, as I always say, if you like what you're hearing, please share it. Please tell your friends, tell your neighbors, call the grandkids. We're here every day at 6 p.m. with the live show Chicago Jazz Magazine presents Chicago Music Revealed. And also, I should also say, I'm also the director of programming and entertainment of the soon-to-be-opening Epiphany Center for the Arts. I know many of you have heard me talk about that in the past. And as we get closer to the fall, we're going to have a lot more to talk about with that. We're going to be opening up in September. Hopefully, everything goes as planned and everyone stays safe, healthy, and socially distant from each other so we can actually do that and get some live music happening again in the world. Now, we're going to get into our first guest, our only guest today, actually, which is exciting. It's Gordon. wait a minute. Gordon Gurdina. Yeah. I knew I had everything right in front of me. And there it is. Gordon Gurdina. He's got an incredible new recording. And what I'm going to do, Gordon, before I bring you on, I'm going to play a clip so they can get a little feel for what we're going to be talking about. And then we're going to talk to Gordon on the other side. He's on the phone and we're going to have a good conversation. He's got the brand new recording with his Nomad Trio. Here's a little clip of that, and then we will be right back. All right, so that gave you a little bit of a taste of what we're going to be talking about here. Gordon, how are you, man? Thanks for jumping on today.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, definitely. You know, we talked a little bit before you came on, and, you know, we could talk about your career for probably a couple hours. So we're not going to do that specifically. The first thing we're going to do, we're going to talk about this new recording. And the recording, it came out in January, I think I'm correct, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And and this is the Nomad Trio, and I love the premise behind it because you named it the trio and the recording because of the lifestyle of a typical touring musician. It's nomadic, obviously.
It's true. Yeah. It was, getting that band together is a feat and it's, you know, on its own. So it kind of seemed fitting, you know.
A little bit about that, because I think a lot of people that are watching this might be casual music fans, so they might not understand the feat that it takes to actually get three incredibly busy working musicians together to actually do a tour, let alone record something.
Yeah, like this, that basically what happened for that is we did a tour and then we did the recording, and it was for that whole year. I had 10 days that Matt could do, and then it just lined up with, I think it was 7 days that Jim could do, and he literally, like, the night before we met in Montana, he was in Chicago right before. I can't remember where he was, but he had something lined up the day before. The day we finished the recording studio, he left that night, and then he had something the next morning. So it was like, it lined up like to the minute almost, that we, you know, when we could get together. So basically I just find times where we can link up, and then I just, you know, book as many shows as I can in that time and then go from there. So, I mean, right now everybody's free, but
yeah, right. Yeah. You know, everybody's got lots of time. Unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, talk a little bit about this, because looking over the tune selections and looking over the repertoire, now you wrote all of the compositions on this, from what I gathered. And the premise behind it is that I thought it was really interesting because you're talking about, you know, obviously three working musicians, so you're nomadic, but then you're also talking about different places and different settings and different atmospheres that you're in from all your travels. And that's how you came up with the concept of some of the repertoire.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like place ends up having a lot to do with how I am, like where I'm writing and how I'm writing, just randomly almost, just because, you know, I've got to fit things in and do them wherever I am. If I get a minute on the road, that's kind of where I do something. Mm-hmm. And then where I am kind of reflects that. So a lot of the writing comes out of one necessity because something needs to get done, but then two, also having some space and some time, you know, and that often happens when I'm on the road or in between things or on vacation even sometimes. And that, that record we did, I'd written a lot of it. It was about 6 months before I think I'd written everything. And then we ended up having, I forgot, we had one run through of the music. I think 2 or 3 weeks before we did the tour, I was in New York with doing some shows with my band, a different band, the Merrill, and we had a chance to rehearse because Jim was in town for like a day. So we did a quick rehearsal with at iBeam, and it was like a cold day, so the piano was completely out of tune. So it was just like a ridiculous rehearsal, like nothing made sense. It was just like to do it to the point of like, okay, this is going to work. And then that was it. So it was like about 30 minutes we ran through the music, and then we're like, okay, good, things are gonna be fine. And I'm like, and then that was it.
This kind of music to me, right? So there's a theme to it, obviously, and there's changes and stuff, but then mm-hmm. there's a lot of improvisation and a lot of almost sounds like spontaneous composition to it, right? So I mean, is that really the key? I mean, you had to find those right guys to be able to understand exactly what's going on, and then also to be able to play this stuff on your level without a ton of rehearsals. I mean, there's got to be a lot of, do you guys talk about a lot of stuff rather than rehearse? Are you just kind of talking through kind of your concepts on where you want stuff to go as you're playing, how it should flow, or how does that work?
Well, with those guys, I kind of feel like if I've written the notes down, like I've done more than enough, and I don't want to get in anybody's way. So I kind of try not to direct too much. And especially in that situation, like if you've got a guy like Jim or Matt, like I feel like the big part I find is I kind of hear a band and think of the individuals. So I'm really writing for individuals. Like I'm writing for Matt, I'm writing for Jim, and I'm writing for them in a way that I can hear them playing and for their sounds. So therefore I'm not really expecting anything different than what they do. Mm-hmm. And then when you hear them, they can, it's always surpasses anything I've ever thought of before. And I feel like that always helps by giving people the space to be themselves and to take it wherever they want to. And that's the thing I love about music. That's the thing I love about being in projects with other bands, is having that space to be yourself and to let loose and do what you hear. And then all those guys are listening. And it was like, once the written music was there, I could imagine, you know, different ways of where we could get from one written part of it to the next different part. And then once we play, it does what it's going to do, you know. And we didn't talk really about much at all. There were a few pieces where I didn't quite know, where I had one idea, and then we kind of came up with some stuff together very quickly, like, oh well, you know, maybe we don't have to come back to this and we can just go here, or we can keep the form for a bit here, let's try that. Like there was some talk like that. But for the most part, it's mostly already kind of written there. And then all the improv in between is wide open and everybody's listening to see what to do next, you know?
Well, that's the interesting part about this too, I think. And I love the fact that you actually tour and then you record, because especially with this style of music, right? I mean, when you're doing this stuff, it's got to be like, you know, apples to oranges from the time you start playing the gigs and start doing the tour to the end. And then you're really familiar with what's happening. So really the true essence of what you composed of your piece is probably this that's on the finished copy, because you guys have played through it and you're all familiar with it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of like, it's like a sign of the times. And also, I mean, I wasn't living in New York. So it's like, we could only get together when we could get together. But even if I was living there, I mean, I don't know many of my friends in any city that really, you know, rehearse every week or have a chance where they can play super regular. It's always like these compact moments of time for projects, it seems like to me. So I just figure the best way to really do that is to put it in like a compact amount of time, learn this music in this amount of time, we're going to do these shows. And you can get like, you know, like a year's worth of development out of a week if you really, you know, have the shows, have the time to do it. And that's why I think it works best that way. And it's more of like I was saying before, it's more of a artistic directive to get the music going more than a commercial one. Because then whenever you're touring music that isn't released. You're kind of like touring off your last record. And that just happened. We just did the tour in January. And I think except for one or two shows, all the music was all new music. So it's all the next record. So we were selling this record because it had just come over. But and then all the music it did was the next record that's now done that I'm like waiting to release for when we can play again, which will probably be next year. So it's like, and so you're constantly just playing, you know, touring your next record. So, you know, except for like a song or two that makes it in there.
Well, you know,
but I feel like, and my goal is to try and keep the sort of the development of the band going and that moving more than, you know, recreating a thing that you've made, you know?
That's my my next question for you is because, I mean, you're in all these different projects and, you know, I thought it was interesting. We talked a little bit before you came on, but I read somewhere that you decided at some point that you're like, okay, I'm going to get ingrained in the music scene in New York just as ingrained as you are in Vancouver. And how did it's got to be really important for you to keep groups working in order for them to stay on top of what's happening and stay on top of the tunes and all that stuff too. Right. I mean, that's a natural progression for any creative person is to constantly keep with some of the same people so you can continue to grow together. And then that's where the best creativity comes out of it. But like what you said, you weren't in New York, but then you could get into New York and you could do things. I mean, how important, especially with this kind of music, I would have to imagine that once you find the right like-minded guys, maybe with any of your groups, you try to stick with those like-minded guys so you can grow organically and creatively.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really is kind of like it's like a modern version of, like, you know, the band Big Pink House vibe, you know, where like you have a band and you all live together and you make music together for years and it becomes this thing. I mean, that doesn't really happen very often anymore. And this, but I've always loved that kind of idea, and I've always loved bands. Like, I've always loved the chemistry that happens between this particular group of people working together and keeping that going and seeing where that can go to. And this is a way I've found to be able to do that is by having short amount of times where we can all focus 100% on what we're doing and then go back to our lives and everything else and all other projects and other tours. And in doing that, the world kind of got real small because I mean, I still have a lot of projects in Vancouver and the scene is incredible here, but I also grew up here. So there's like a feeling of like wanting to expand and you know, open up to, you know, the whole world, because it's, you know, once a year the whole world comes to Vancouver and there's a jazz festival. It's amazing, but like I want that more my whole life.
Yeah, right.
Keep that moving, and you know, you find really, you know, like-minded people, and you get this other chemistry of people from different places, and I you know, have that with a lot of musicians in New York, and you know, some in Europe and in Chicago and New Orleans. You know, like there's a lot of different things happening, so I'm trying to kind of work in New York. Kind of started a long time ago because I studied with Gary Peacock for years when I got to university, and he was upstate New York, so I'd always go to New York and you know, check out bands and meet people and then go study, and did that for years until, you know, we made a record. And then since then I was just like missing that connection, so I just tried to make it more regular.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why, you know, keep going back. And then and now, you know, it started with my quartet with Oscar Noriega and Russ Lossing and Satoshi Takeshi. And we've got two records out now, and we've done, you know, a ton of touring together. And that band really made its own sound out of, you know, four really individual players, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, so how did you end up playing the oud? Because it's guitar and oud. But how did you end up with the oud? I mean, it's such an interesting instrument, and I don't see it played a lot in jazz, in the jazz realm, especially, let alone, you know, many other genres.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it came out of when I was young. I had a great guitar teacher who's still a really good friend of mine, who, when I was about 13, I think he was always playing, bringing me records of new things. It was a different, like, whatever I was into, he was bringing me something else, too. So I was listening to a lot of jazz music, a lot of blues music I was really into. And he was hearing me. I was playing slide at the time. I was 13, and it was like, you know, like I think it was like 2 weeks I was into slide guitar. But I was doing this when I was like 13, and he brought me this Vishwamohan Bhat record with Simone Shaheen, and they're playing duo. I think it's a trio on part of the record, and it's called Sultana. And I was here, and he wanted me to hear the slide, Vishwamohan Bhat play slide, because it's, you know, he's incredible, which I loved. But I heard him play, and then I heard that Simone, who, you know, is one of the greatest oud players in the world, and it just, the sound blew my mind. I just fell in love with it right away, and to listen to that record. And then I asked for more and found more different artists. You know, Hamza Al-Din was a huge one, and Simone, and Arbaheem, and Munir Bashir eventually. And then I was just listening to it, and I was just listening to oud basically specifically, and then Arabic music started to you know, get in there more, ensemble oud music. Mm-hmm. Or ensemble Arabic music, I should say. And then I, when I got into university, I looked on eBay and found an oud, because I didn't even know where to get one. You know, Vancouver suburbs, there's not a big Arabic population here. There's not a lot of Arabic music at all. And then I got an oud, and then came in like about 2 months after I had it. I started a band with my friends, and then my friend got a business card at his music shop, and it said, Sirwan Yamolki, oud virtuoso. So he goes, so he gave it to me, and I called him, and then I started taking lessons, and he's an incredible oud player and poet, who was my teacher, Sirwan, and he was an amazing Iraqi musician, and he played with Jamil Bashir, and is an amazing musician. So I learned a lot from him, and then I started studying after that, mm-hmm. more like formally, you know, really getting into the instrument. And it was, I always kind of wanted sound in relation to improv and everything I was doing. But then I was playing with a lot of Persian musicians and Indian musicians. We had a band called Sangha, which was Arabic, Persian, Indian music, but all our own compositions. So that kind of just developed from there. And I was playing in a lot of Persian ensembles, and then also started my own bands and playing a lot of Arabic music and got more into the repertoire, and then tried to, like, you know, I'm trying to study it as seriously as I can. And then, but, you know, with also, you know, taking into account my, you know, all the other interests that I have, has sort of created a different, my own kind of voice on the instrument that isn't, you know, purely traditional.
Well, I've got to believe, because you just covered a lot of ground, which is incredible. And I have to believe that all of these different people that you studied with, Gary Peacock, but then also the oud master that you were talking about, and all of the different styles of music that you were exposed to. I mean, that's a gigantic realm of different styles of music, and the way people think about different styles of music and how they interpret different mm-hmm. styles of music. Now, when I'm talking to you and then I'm thinking back about what I was hearing with this new recording, I mean, all of that comes out in your playing, because, you know, all of the music that you've listened to is obviously part of you, and that comes out as your voice. So really, I mean, how much has that really expanded the way you think about it? Because if you were just a straight ahead jazz player or a straight ahead whatever player, you probably wouldn't be thinking about stuff or even composing anywhere near what you're doing now, because your mind is so much more open to all the different rhythms and all the different harmonics.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's basically just, you know, it's what you're exposed to. And then also, how you like your personality. I've always thought this, and, you know, and think about people are always like, you know, how do you find your voice, or who are you? You know, the
right.
question. And it's like, you can't, like, these are things you can't define. They think they're things you are. They're not things you go to. So it's kind of like, you can't hide your personality for long. And I feel like all that stuff comes out when you play. So I feel like it's like, for years, I wanted to be Jim Hall and Bill Evans. So all through university, that's all I wanted to do. And I tried to be him. That's what we do. Like,
sure.
And the reason you do that is because there's something in you that loves that so much that it wants to be able to do that. And that's good, because that is part of you. And by searching out those things, I think you find who you are by going after the things you love. And I never really bought into the academic principles that were kind of getting shoved in my throat about, like, you know, you got to be systematic, start at the beginning and move here. It's like, well, nothing ever runs in a straight line. I mean, I think I kind of always tried to use my, you know, what I loved and what really touched me and what I really wanted and felt. That's what I wanted to study and that's what I wanted to get into. So I remember having this and I was like, you know, I want to be Jim Hall because he's the greatest.
Yeah, right.
And Bill Evans, I mean, Jesus. So I was trying to do that. I remember I had this one, I was at Western Washington University. I was studying and this, you know, guitar guy came in, was an amazing bebop guitar player. And we sat down to have our private lesson for the first time. And he goes, let's play a tune. So we start playing a tune and we finish it. The first thing he says to me is he goes, well, you know, it's obvious you're not going to be a guitar player like Jim Hall or something like that. You're going to have your own. And I was like completely crushed. You know, 'cause he was, but it was like, he could tell in a second, like, I'm there are aspects of his music that I love and that come out, but it's like, it's also blatant, like what you are is blatantly obvious. So mm-hmm. It's like, you can't really get away from it. You just have, I think you have to embrace it and go for these things. And, you know, it's then you, whatever it is that you are and you love, you become that. And that's what I've been always trying to do and just haven't, you know, I've been sort of disciplined about study and getting as good as I can and really learning as much as I can about the things I love, but then also being able to let go and let what I hear out, you know. Well, and that's a lot of, I really studied a lot or got close to that with talking to Gary Peacock, you know.
I was gonna say, I mean, that takes a lot to understand, you know. It's one of those things, man. It's like, and I love what you said, because you know not everything is a straight line. And I know the academic, you know, it's real easy to quantify and say, okay, well, you do this, then that, because then they can grade you and they can understand how to work out grades and how to put the system together and how to graduate you or not graduate you, you know. But really, I think it's really hard too, because when you're doing that and if you're learning systematically and you're always thinking that way, for you to actually be able to open your mind, you need to almost have an epiphany at some point and say, wait a minute, I am like sitting here worried about this stuff when actually I should just forget about all this stuff because I can do it. And then you really let your ears and your mind and your creativity go. And it sounds like you were just starting to say, it sounds like that's where Gary Peacock took you to the next level on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Gary's an incredible human being. And brilliant musician and he had, it was, his thing was always like, don't take my word for it. Like he never wanted to have a method, you know, like his methodology wasn't that. It was like, I mean, he's got a lot of things that, you know, make a lot of sense, but they all come from you and your ear and what's your thing, what you hear, and pushing you to like kind of sort of develop that. And that can go in whatever direction you are and how you hear something. So it's always you're always kind of counting on yourself and then counting on, getting deeper into that, and don't fool yourself. You know, we all end up, you know, fooling ourselves a bit, but the whole thing is like, try to stay true to what you hear and try and just get better, you know? And through that, it was kind of like a real, you know, a lot of them, I mean, I had so many kind of epiphanies like that, like chatting with Gary that were, you know, changed my whole life.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I can only imagine. And then, I can only imagine that.
Yeah. And then, I studied with, Tim Byrne a bit. And one of the things, the main things I remember like really getting from him was, he's like, well, I just do what's, you know, I find the, right. And like make what's logical to me, you know? And it's like, yeah, there's like this sense of logic that you can have and develop from yourself. And it's like, it's okay. And it felt like this huge relief. A lot of it talking with this, like that I can just trust that, you know, and just, trust my own logic and follow that and then see what happens. And then that's led to a lot of, freedom and open doors for myself.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I kind of feel like that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, that's I think is the hardest part of being a musician, is to actually just trust yourself, right? You trust yourself and understand, hey, I can do this, no problem. I think that's the biggest, once somebody crosses that hurdle, as you have, then the sky's the limit. And you know, I think that's the struggle, right, with a lot of younger musicians. They're trying to get to that point where they actually trust and are confident in what they're doing and can get to that next level. So, you know, we're talking to Gordon Gordina. He's got the brand new recording out, the Nomad Trio. Gordon Gordina's Nomad Trio, and I believe the name of the recording is Nomad. And you can pick it up if you go to Bandcamp and do a search for Gordon Gordina. You'll find him right there. Let's talk a little bit about the compositions on this recording, because I'm always fascinated with somebody that you know, can play and then also can write. And it's also, to me, it's more interesting to find out what your process is. I mean, how do you go about, first of all, with this recording? I by the way, let's see, what's the name of the Ben Bao? Is that that's the name?
Oh, yeah.
Ben Bao, right? And it's about a Northern California hotel, and it reminded you of the Overlook Hotel in The Shining, one of my favorite movies, by the way.
So yeah.
That caught my eye, and I love that the tune sounds, you know, just like that. So how do you come up? Do you start with a theme and then write melody and then write harmony, or is it just all come to you, or how? What's your process?
Well, when I was studying with Gary, a lot of like composition ideas would come out, and it was all about, you know, like his record. Like Gary's written the shortest, you know, jazz song in the book. You know, like his song "More" is basically like three bars or something. And he's always like, you just write what you need, and what we're looking for is sometimes having the most simple or idea, as long as it's like, you know, kind of like pure or real, is like the best thing for improvisers. Like, cause then it leaves, it's like a germ. Like you're just looking for this little seed of an idea. You have it. And then the improviser takes it where they want to go, but it's gotta be real. So kind of understanding kind of like the process of like listening and asking, what do I hear? What do I want to write? What comes next? That kind of thing. And not being, what do I want to have come next? What do I think I should do? What would be cool to do, or any of those things? Just what comes next? And you're not trying to write a good tune, and you're not trying to write a bad tune. You're not trying to have it fit anything. You're not having to do any of these things. And that comes up. So when I was trying to get closer to that process and really hearing hearing from your inner ear, you know, hear, and then writing. And I try to do all of it away from my instrument, so it's not influenced by, you know, your fingers kind of thing.
Right,
although sometimes, I mean, I've also had times where you just like improvise and then there's the song, you know, and then you write it down. So it's always like a bunch of different things, but mainly it's coming down to asking those questions. And then when it's for a band, often I would just be like, just imagine those guys sitting there. What would that sound like? And then just think, okay, what would this sound like? And then hearing something and writing that down, and then like, okay, well, what could happen after that? And then, and moving in that direction. And then, often it would come where I'd have an idea, which would be somewhat of a short idea. And often I would leave that, and then that would be the improv. And some of the songs in there actually kind of are that. They're just like a small germ. And then the other ones, I started to be like, well, what if I stretch that farther? And instead of leaving all the development up to the improv, I try and fill that out more, because I didn't, you know, really study composition huge in university or any of that. And I was trying to, like, so now I was like, okay, well, let's take this further. And that's kind of how I've written everything since, is to kind of just keep asking those questions and then keep filling out what I think happens next, and then writing lines. And often I think more polyphonically than, you know, melody chord kind of thing. And that just works for me. And then it turns into being chords and, you know, but I very rarely use chord symbols anymore, because I feel, I mean, if it's simple and clear, then I do that, but it's often clearer to just write what you hear. And with, you know, musicians now that are so many incredible musicians that can do things I can't believe we're even humans can do.
Yeah.
I mean, you can just write out exactly what you've written, and then they get all the information. Then it's all there. Then they're hearing a real thing. So they're really getting more inside what you're hearing inside when you're writing the thing down, to the germ, the, you know, seed and original thing that you're hearing. And then that's just written there. So they just play that. So, I mean, that's somewhat of a kind of like spiritual, deeper kind of concept, but also completely practical. I just wrote exactly what I heard and then gave them exactly what it was. And I knew exactly what to play. And then they're like, that opened up all these other possibilities, you know?
So much
so
good
for
stuff.
Me, I feel like that's more.
I love the way you're explaining it, because it makes total sense to me. I mean, you're making it sound way easier than it actually is, but I mean, you know, you're right. That's the truest form of it. That's incredible.
Yeah. Cause it often like, I mean, just like for one example, I mean, I feel like harmony is always ambiguous, you know, and it's always how people hear things. And that was, I remember, one kind of weird example is, Gary was telling me once he was on a session with Joe Henderson, and they did this. They're doing, I can't remember who wrote the tune or something. There's some tune, but then he like looked over at Joe Henderson's part, and like Joe was like, okay, what's happening? This? Can you play this? Can you play that? And he was getting the piano player to play, you know, through the tune. And then he was marking up his chart, and then he went over and looked at it. It was like, he just wrote like a whole other set of changes on the chart, which was like the same chord, but it's like how he was hearing what was happening, you know? So it was like, to really get into what was going on, he needed to hear what the person was hearing, and the chord symbol colored it in a different way in some, because it had a whole different level of, or a whole other, in what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it symbolized something else maybe for the person writing it than it did for the person reading it, you know? And it's in his head, he needed this. So it's always kind of this ambiguity when you write the actual voice, and then it's like, that's clear. And then they can interpret how they're hearing that, how they hear what that is, you know, and harmony always has that individual and ambiguousness to it that I think is the thing I love. I mean, those are all the corners of everything that I love about the music, of those spots where it gets in there and you have these, you know, those are magical places, you know, in tunes. And I feel like that in writing it, as you're trying to, I'm just trying to get exactly what I'm hearing. And sometimes I don't understand it. Like, it doesn't come clearly to be like, oh, well, that's a, you know, G7 flat 5 chord. You know what I mean? Like, it's not having that be that without it end up being where the symbol is basically writing out the chord anyway, because you're writing, you know, 8-note symbol. You know.
Wow. I've never even thought about it that way, but that's a great way to think. It's like, geez, you know. What a great story, too, by the way, Joe Henderson, Gary Peacock talking about it. I mean, my God, a couple of masters there, and it's fascinating to hear how that just goes down when, you know, you're doing one thing and he's like, oh yeah, here, you know, and this is how they're thinking about it. It just kind of makes you start thinking about things completely differently for your own music as well.
Yeah. Exactly.
So we're talking to Gordon Gurdina, his new recording, which is fantastic. Nomad, it's part of the Nomad Trio. Now I would ask you where you're playing, what you have coming up, but I think we all know the answer to that. But I did look at your past tour, and it looks like you came through Chicago and you were at Elastic Arts Center at one point, I think in January, right? So you got, that was one of your last gigs, I think, of 2020 so far.
Yeah, last for that group. It was right after that. We did that tour, and then we went, we did a show in New York, and then I went to Europe with my quartet, with Oscar and Russ. And Satoshi, and then I think that was it for the rest of the year.
Yeah. So how are you holding out right now during the COVID-19 situation? I mean, what's it like up in Vancouver? What's the, you guys are still on lockdown up there, just like we are in the States, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, we've had BC's been actually really incredible at locking it down. We've got like the lowest numbers of anywhere in Canada, and so that's been good. And they're kind of opening up a little bit. I mean, we're all still socially distancing, and but yeah, some businesses are starting to open now, but we're trying to stay in more, you know, as much as possible, because, you know, we're waiting for the second wave to happen. And our kids are out of school, obviously, so basically I've been homeschooling and trying to get some music going. I've been working on a lot of I've got a couple actually solo records coming up, I'm kind of working on some solo stuff. I was supposed to go to Slovenia in June with my group Square Peg, which is Matt Maneri and Chisad Ismali and Christian Lillinger, this amazing drummer from Berlin. But that festival obviously isn't happening, but we're going to do they're doing live broadcast shows. And Irreversible Entanglements is going to be there. And I think Miles Okazaki is doing something. And I'm going to do a solo concert. So we're doing, like, you know, pre-screen things. We're doing a set at home and then sending it over. So that's kind of the next thing I've got to do. gonna do social for that, and then
Well, that's one of those things, you know. You tell me. I think there's a lot of people trying to do the streaming thing and all that, but I love the fact that these festivals are, and this is happening in Chicago too, and some of the Midwest festivals that I'm familiar with. But I mean, yes, they had to cancel, but at least they're trying to also bring the artists that they were going to bring in live and have them do something so they can keep the festival name and keep the artist's name and do something so that it's something happens in 2020, so it's not just a lost year.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, I mean, we're really lucky in Canada because we've got, you know, we've got a lot of arts funding, which helps keep, you know, me alive. And we did get everybody kind of like, even in the gig economy, got you know, funding for the pandemic. So we basically have, like, I haven't had to worry about as much financial stress as I know a lot of my friends have having to worry about. So I feel like extremely lucky for that right now. So I haven't got a lot to complain about with this in comparison to, you know, so many people I know that it's hitting really, really hard. So my hope is that things clear up some, you know, relatively soon so the musicians can get back to playing again and getting back to, you know, making records and touring and
That's the goal. And, you know, I think that, and you're doing the same thing, right? You're releasing maybe a couple of solo recordings and stuff. So I think right now, this time, I think a lot of musicians, a lot of creatives are taking this time because they can't do anything else. And maybe they're creating, and maybe on the other end of it, if there's a silver lining, there's going to be even better music or more music coming out than there would have been just because everybody's kind of hunkered down and they're creating right now, you know?
Yeah. It's definitely been it kind of goes between people I know being like, man, it's been good to have a break. You know, like a lot of people that have been going so hard. And I feel like that personally, too, where you just like, you know, you're in the rat race. You're just trying to keep going. You're paddling and just keeping the machine going. And then this is giving you a chance to, like, look back and maybe get some time to play on your own, practice, kind of live life a little bit, you know, have a little bit of breathing room. It's been for a lot because sometimes it gets really hectic. That's kind of like a silver lining for sure.
Yeah. Well, Gordon, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I'm glad we are connected. And, you know, the next time you have anything coming out, be sure to hit me up so that we can have you back on the show. I'm going to encourage everybody to go to Bandcamp, look up Gordon Gurdina, and check out the new recording Nomad and the Nomad Trio. It's really interesting. I can't even describe it because there's a lot of different styles happening in there, but it was, you know, the clips that I listened to, and I'm going to go consume the whole recording now later on tonight and just really get into it. Cause I feel like it's the kind of recording that if you sit down and listen to it, your mind can go places and you can just get really deep into the music and hear all the layers, all the textures and all of the back and forth and improvisational themes throughout the entire album. So I need to sit and focus. And luckily there's no clubs to go to, so I have plenty of time to do that later on tonight. So thanks for being on the show, man. I really appreciate you taking some time.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, definitely. Great. All right, stay safe. We'll talk soon. Thanks.
Sounds good. Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Gordon Gurdina, I'll tell you, I'm going to suggest that everybody go check this out because, like what I just said, I consumed, you know, bits and pieces because I got it in and we got Gordon on the show and I wanted to make sure I was up to speed on everything. And the more I listened to it, I was like, man, I need to sit and consume this thing and really shut the lights off maybe and put my mind straight to the tune so I can put my ears on the music and really get into the music because it's very creative. And the whole premise of the group, now that you know, I mean, they toured and then record. So, I mean, you can really hear the full compositional aspects of what he was going for, which I love. So, Gordon Gurdina, check it out on Bandcamp. Thanks so much again, Gordon, for being on the show. I appreciate that. And it's so great. You know, I'm connecting with so many different musicians from all around the country. And tomorrow on the show, this is episode 44. So, tomorrow's episode 45. Yeah, I got to figure this out, man. I apologize. You know, I'm running back and forth, and then I forget what I'm talking about sometimes. So episode 45 tomorrow, we have got a Chicago artist. First, we've got Dave Katzman coming out. We're going to do the blues, Chicago blues and beyond. hit that he always does. And then we are going to co-host. This is the first time we're going to try this. We're going to bring on our good friend and international blues superstar from Chicago, Taranzo Cannon, will be on the show. So he's going to be on tomorrow. That's going to be a lot of fun. Taranzo's got tons of great stories, tons of great energy, new recordings. He's an Alligator Records recording artist. So that's going to be a blast having him on tomorrow. Cannot wait. So that's tomorrow at 6 p.m. You will not want to miss that. And then next week, man, we have got jam-packed shows. I've got Matt Ullery is on the show next week. Michelle Thomas and Darren Scorza is going to be on. They're going to be previewing their live stream that's going to happen. We've got a bass summit on June 5th that's going to happen with Frank Russell, Daryl Jones from the Rolling Stones, Chuck Webb, Bear Williams will be back on, a few others that's going to be, I'm going to be directing traffic. That's next Friday, June 5th. All of this happening at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. So mark your calendars. We're going to be posting more and more stuff. If you have not subscribed to our newsletter, I encourage you to go over to Chicago Music Revealed and subscribe. We are going to be sending out the updates for what's coming up next week, in addition to what you missed. So if you missed a podcast or something, we're going to make sure that everything is up there and you're going to be able to stay in tune. So we're already at episode 45. Man, it's already... been a heck of a couple of months here, hasn't it? Man, oh man. Hopefully everybody's staying safe, everybody's staying healthy, and I will see you tomorrow as always. As I always say, if you like this show, please share it, please tell a friend, please tell a neighbor, call the grandkids. Every day, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. Like to thank Epiphany Center for the Arts, of course, for all the support, and looking forward to announcing things for the fall very, very soon. And until next time, hopefully I will see you on the scene sometime soon in person, but if not, I know I will see you back here tomorrow at 6 p.m. for the next broadcast. Stay safe.